killing 24 people and injuring hundreds. Obama hung up the phone, waved me into the room, spoke briefly about the terrible tragedy in Oklahoma, and then shifted entirely to the new subject, the FBI. The president was almost grave in explaining why he took the selection of the FBI director so seriously. In a way, this and the Supreme Court are the two most important personnel decisions a president makes, because I'm choosing for the future, he said. You will be here after I'm gone. He said he thought there was great value in that long tenure, and hoped that if I were the director, I could help a new president. For example, he said he had been pushed to make military decisions as a new and inexperienced president, and under great pressure from military leaders. Without saying so, he seemed to be expressing regret that he didn't have the experienced counsel around him that he needed at the time. He thought it was good that I would be around to help a future, perhaps similarly inexperienced leader, think about national security decisions better. We talked about the natural tension between the need to investigate leaks of classified information and the need to support a free press. Recent Department of Justice efforts to investigate leak cases were much in the news at that point, and the press was assailing the alleged Obama administration crackdown. We didn't talk about particular cases, but I shared my view that the balance could be struck by thoughtful leadership. It simply was not sustainable to say the investigators would never seek information from reporters, and it was an exaggeration to say that we couldn't have a free press if we investigated leaks. We could protect a free press and classified information at the same time. What surprised me most, and led me in the moment to realize Patrice was likely wrong about this being a waste of time, was the president's view of the FBI job. It turns out he had a different conception of the FBI director than either I or most partisans assumed. He said, "I don't want help from the FBI on policy. I need competence and independence. I need to sleep at night knowing the place is well run and the American people protected." Contrary to my assumption, the fact that I was politically independent from him might actually have worked in my favor. I replied that I saw it the same way. The FBI should be independent and totally divorced from politics, which is what the 10-year term for a director was designed to ensure. After my meeting with President Obama, I called Patrice with the wise-ass comment, "Your faith in their poor judgment may be misplaced." Feeling good about my conversation with Obama, I agreed to the nomination when it was offered. My family would stay in Connecticut for 2 years to wind up all the things they were involved in, but I fully intended to serve as director of the FBI through the year 2023. What, I wondered, could possibly interfere with that? After deciding I was his choice, but before he announced the nomination, President Obama surprised me by inviting me back to the Oval Office. We sat in the same seats and were again joined by the White House counsel. The president opened the conversation by explaining, "Once you are director, we won't be able to talk like this." What he meant was that, for over 40 years, the leaders of our government had understood that a president and an FBI director must be at arm's length. The FBI is often called upon to investigate cases that touch on the president's senior aides and affect the course of his presidency. To be credible, both in reality and in perception, the FBI and its director cannot be close with the president. So one final time, President Obama and I had the kind of conversation two college classmates might. We discussed and debated hard issues that were not under the FBI director's purview, like using drones to kill terrorists. I was struck by the way he could see and evaluate a variety of angles on a complicated issue, and I suppose he wanted to make one last assessment of me and the way I thought through problems before my nomination was a done deal. On my way out the door, I told Kathy Rumler how surprised I was by the interesting discussion, telling her, "I can't believe someone with such a supple mind actually got elected president." President Obama and I would never have another casual conversation. Before I took the job, the FBI had had only 6 directors since 1935, when it was officially named as the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Its first, the legendary J. Edgar Hoover, had led the organization for nearly 50 years, including its predecessor organization, the Bureau of Investigation, and built a culture around himself that profoundly shaped the Bureau and its agents. For decades, Hoover used an iron hand to drive the agency and strike fear in the hearts of political leaders. He had personal files on many of them, something he let them know. He dined and drank with presidents and senators, letting them use the FBI when it suited him, and frightening them with the FBI when that suited him. Inside the FBI, the director was the absolute center. His approach brought tremendous fame, attention, and power to the organization. It also created an environment in which the goal of most agents and supervisors in the FBI was to avoid being noticed by Mr. Hoover. Tell him what he wants to hear, then get on with your work. That mentality was hard to displace, even decades after Hoover's death. Before I was sworn in as FBI director in 2013, I spent a week shadowing Bob Mueller. Bob, a former Marine, was a bit old school as director, not given to what he saw as touchy-feely stuff. In the grueling days immediately after September 11, 2001, for example, his wife had prodded Bob to be sure his people were holding up under the stress. Early the next morning, or so I was told, he dutifully telephoned key members of his staff, whose offices were all within a 10-second walk of his, asking, "How are you doing?" When each offered the perfunctory reply of, "Fine, sir," he replied, "Good," and hung up. Mueller was characteristically disciplined about preparing me to follow him as director. During the first morning of my week of shadowing, he explained that he had arranged for me to talk with the leaders of the FBI's major divisions. I was to meet with them one-on-one, he said, and they would each brief me on their area's challenges and opportunities. Then, Mueller explained, without a hint of a smile, he would meet with me after each of these sessions to tell you what's really going on. That comment rocked me. The FBI is an institution devoted to finding the truth. Why would the director need to tell me what's really going on after each meeting? The assumption in Bob's comment was that senior officials either weren't aware of what was happening at the FBI or weren't going to be truthful to me, their new boss, about it. My guess was the latter. Many people in my experience hesitate to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth to their bosses, and for reasons that may make sense. I could hear the voices of jaded FBI veterans channeling a character in the movie The Departed. What's the upside to doing that? It can only hurt you. Bosses are like mushrooms. You keep them in the dark and you feed them shit. I admired Bob and marveled at the way he had transformed the FBI in the aftermath of 9/11, driving the organization to break down walls, overcome its heritage as solely a detective culture, and become a fully integrated member of the intelligence community. Bob had proven that it would be a mistake to break the FBI into a criminal investigative agency and a counterterrorism agency by making the FBI great at both. I was in awe of what he had done, but I also wanted to signal a more open style of leadership. I was officially sworn in as the seventh director of the FBI on September